On the line from Wellington this morning, I have Mark Atkin and Mary Byrne. They are the spokespeople for the Fluoride Action Network here in New Zealand at www.fannz.org.nz. And when I read on fluoride on, say, Wikipedia, to get an understanding of this mineral, I find it somewhat confusing as to what it is. However, it is a mineral that is found in water at 0.01 to 0.03 parts per million, which is not very much. Then when I read on the term water fluoridation in Wikipedia, I see that in many ways it's a pro-stance, and its piece on opposition to fluoridation has to be seen as even-handed. It puts water fluoridation in the same category of vaccinations and food fortification, where the ethical consideration presents the conflict between benefiting the common good and infringing the individual rights. So I wish to say kia ora and good morning, Mark and Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mark or Mary, why is it that fluoridation is essential to health?
Fluoridation is not essential for health. Fluoride is not a nutrient like iodine or vitamins. There is no minimum daily required intake, and there are no adverse health effects from not having fluoride, unlike not having enough vitamin C, for example. We know that before Europeans came to New Zealand, Maori had perfect teeth without water fluoridation and with the naturally low levels we have in New Zealand.
So what is wrong with fluoride?
Mary here. There's a lot of things wrong with fluoride. As Mark pointed out, it's not an essential nutrient or anything that we need for our health. So what's the problem with it is that, for one thing, 50% accumulates in our bones. And fluoride is known to cause a disease called skeletal fluorosis, and that's from having too much fluoride in your bones, and it causes people to get crippled over. Now, that happens in places like India and China, where they have high amounts of fluoride in the water. We wouldn't have the crippling skeletal fluorosis in New Zealand, but the trouble is that the first stage of skeletal fluorosis is exactly the same as arthritis. So what I think we're finding in New Zealand is that a lot of people actually have skeletal fluorosis, but they're being diagnosed as having arthritis. So that's one of the problems with fluoride. Other problems, there's now 23 published studies linking fluoride to lowered IQ. Once again, these studies would have been done with higher amounts of fluoride, but what we don't know is how it's affecting children in New Zealand with the lower amounts of fluoride, because even if it's only affecting IQ by a small amount, that's actually still very important when you go across the whole community. Then in 2006, there was a study published in Cancer Causes and Control, and it showed that boys drinking fluoridated water between the ages of 6 and 10 were 500 to 700% more likely to develop a bone cancer called osteosarcoma in their late teens. Now, there had been other studies prior to that, some showing fluoridated water caused osteosarcoma and some showing it didn't. But what this study, it sort of like ended up filling in the missing piece of the jigsaw, and that's that it's to do with the age that boys are exposed. If they're exposed between those ages of 6 and 10, that's when they have the heightened risk. And that's why it had never been picked up before, because when other people had looked at it, they'd only looked at their fluoride exposure at the time they had been diagnosed with osteosarcoma. So this study now in 2006, nobody's been able to refute it. So, and it's looking like this could be the case. So if that's the case and we're having extra cases of osteosarcoma in New Zealand, which is an extremely dangerous bone cancer, that's something that we really need to talk about. And then another thing is that fluoride affects the thyroid. Now, we know that it affects the thyroid at very low levels. So a lot of people in New Zealand will be experiencing fluoride exposure at that level. And it will depend on your genetics and your nutritional state, particularly your iodine intake, as to how it affects your thyroid. Now, in the 1950s, doctors used to give thyroid medication to people to slow down their thyroid. So people who had an overactive thyroid, they would give them this medication to slow it down. So what we're getting now is we're getting a thyroid medication through our water supply. So that's just a few of the things. There's actually more things, but there's just some of the things that people need to be aware of.
With medical records of these people suffering from these bone cancers, are there many in New Zealand?
There's about 6 cases of that bone cancer per year in teenage males. So if the study is correct and the ratios are correct, which seems to be the case, that means five out of those six will probably have got that because of being exposed to fluoridated water.
And what's a shame about that is that we had a study in New Zealand a few years back where they looked at people getting osteosarcoma, but they never looked at their fluoride intake, even though it had been recommended in various reviews over the years to have a look at fluoridation status as in connection with osteosarcoma. But in New Zealand, when they did the study in about 2003, they didn't bother again, which seems a shame. And it seemed a shame, you know, why they couldn't go back to the study and start trying to find out where these boys were at that age.
Because when I look at the statistics on it, only about 355 million people globally are on fluoridated water, which is only about 5.7%. So why are they pushing it into New Zealand?
Well, that's a big question. We seem to be influenced by the US, and the US have a big stand on fluoridation, obviously. So we're being influenced by them. But I think our Ministry of Health believes in fluoridation. They believe that it will reduce dental decay. There doesn't seem to be any research to really support that when people get down to the detail, but they just have a belief system in it, so they think that they're helping people. So that's why they push it. That's why the Ministry of Health pushes it, because they believe that it reduces dental decay.
Now, there's a term called dental fluorosis. What is dental fluorosis?
Dental fluorosis is a condition of the teeth which looks like white or, in severe cases, brown or black mottled spots on the teeth. It's caused by fluoride poisoning of the cells that make the tooth enamel when the tooth is forming. There are various degrees of it, but even at low levels, Australian studies show that children can recognise it in others, and they get quite self-conscious about it and can be quite withdrawn just because of having fluorosis on their teeth. It's essentially the first outward sign of long-term fluoride poisoning, and that's recognised internationally and by the World Health Organization.
Yeah, and the Ministry of Health in New Zealand say that dental fluorosis doesn't matter. They say, oh, it's only cosmetic because just a little bit of speckling on people's teeth. Because for most cases, it's only mild, so it doesn't actually look that bad. But I think that that's very unthinking of them, because if a child has a thin blue line on their gum, that means they've had too much lead. So for the Ministry of Health to say that these children have got this outward sign of having too much fluoride, that it's just cosmetic, is very unthinking, because it is most likely that it has affected other parts of their body, particularly their bones.
Okay, can I go back to what is the difference between naturally occurring fluoride and the fluoride that they put in the water?
The first thing to remember is that all fluoride is potentially dangerous, but the fluoride they use in the water supply is approximately 80 times more toxic than the fluoride that's naturally in the water, calcium fluoride. Naturally, fluoride occurs in conjunction with calcium and sometimes magnesium, and both of those bind it, so we can't absorb it very well. The fluorides they use in the water supply are these days silico fluorides, which are highly soluble and very available to the body, so more toxic. We also know from three different studies published between 1975 and just this year that silico fluorides act on the body quite differently from calcium fluoride.
Yes,
yeah, and just because something occurs naturally in the water, it doesn't make it okay. You know, like arsenic occurs naturally in some water supplies, but it's a poison. So I think that's something important for people to remember as well, because some people think, oh, well, fluoride occurs naturally and we just don't have enough in our water supply. But what's the level of enough if it's something that's not good for you?
Yes, it's the sugar problem, really. Our Western diet has changed, and as you said in the introduction, that the Maori, of course, had good teeth, and I know that all the Pacific Islanders had excellent teeth too, that when the explorers came out from Europe, they noticed that all the Polynesians had lovely teeth. So the fact that the Western diet is the big problem?
Yeah, for sure. If you eat white sugar, you're going to get bad teeth pretty much. It doesn't matter what you do to prevent that.
Yeah, I mean, there's other ways of dealing with dental decay. In Canterbury, that's unfluoridated. They embarked on a whole new scheme of enrolling children quite young into the dental clinics so that dental decay was dealt with at a much earlier age and people were much more aware and there was more toothbrushing and all that type of thing. And the thing is, too, is that because fluoridation, by swallowing fluoride, it doesn't help your teeth, it kind of means that It's not like we need an alternative to fluoridation, because fluoridation doesn't help children's teeth anyway. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Some people say, if you stop fluoridation, what are you going to do? The question is, what are you going to do anyway? Because stopping fluoridation will make no difference. And in fact, we saw in Timaru, who stopped fluoridation in 1985, that their tooth decay has reduced, so their dental health has improved just as much as anywhere else ever since, and they now have less tooth decay than any other fluoridated community in the South Island.
And there's been an increase in sugar in most of the foods during this process too, hasn't there?
There has indeed.
Yeah, that's true.
It tells us that something else is going on in terms of our diet or whatever. It has caused a reduction in tooth decay since the 1930s. And we see that in the World Health Organization statistics, that all countries have had the same reduction in tooth decay, even those that have had, say, one part per million of fluoride in the water naturally for a million years, they've still had the same reduction in tooth decay. And in New Zealand, we see the official statistics show from 1930 to 1990, which is 30 years before and 30 years after fluoridation, the improvement in tooth decay was exactly like virtually a straight line. The introduction of fluoridation in the 1960s made no difference whatsoever.
And actually, the two latest studies from New Zealand, the 2008 Auckland study and the 2005 Southland study, and they were both set up to see how much dental fluorosis there was. And so what they found about the dental fluorosis was that 30% of children in the fluoridated areas had some form of dental fluorosis, whereas only 15% in the non-fluoridated areas. But they also found that there was no difference in dental decay. So these are our two latest studies, and they both say there's actually no difference in dental decay between fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas. The only difference that they're seeing is that twice as many children have got some form of dental fluorosis. But it sort of goes back to what you were asking earlier about why do we have it, and it's kind of strange that we have it, and it just seems to be that the Ministry of Health just believe, and then what happens is the councillors believe the Ministry of Health, and they don't want to step out of their comfort zone or step into an issue that they think might be unpopular. So they just want to sort of go along with what's normal and popular and things like that. So they don't do anything. And then the general public, I think for the general public, most people probably don't know. Then people who are becoming aware, they don't realise how bad it is. They don't realise that we're accumulating 50% in our bones, and the fact that 70% of women over 65 in New Zealand have some form of arthritis, and a lot of it may be due to fluoridation. They don't really believe it, because the public tend to have this belief in our authorities. They think, oh, the councillors wouldn't do it if it was that bad. The Ministry of Health wouldn't do it if it was that bad. And it's a kind of a naivety, because they don't realise that the Ministry of Health is an institution and they've got professional reputations at stake. The councillors have got their reputations at stake. So they don't realise there's all these other things going on, and it's not just about, is this the right thing to do?
So I'm speaking with Mark Atkin and Mary Byrne of the Fluoride Action Network here in New Zealand at www.fannz.org.nz. Because I remember many years ago, 30 years ago, I thought drinking fruit juice was going to be a good healthy option for me instead of having fizzy stuff in cans. And I found out that knocked my teeth around a lot. So I guess there's a whole education, and we've got to be able to get to parents to be able to shift their children into another way of drinking and taking in foods. What suggestions do you have?
Well, except the line you're sort of going down is, how do we fix dental decay? Whereas, I mean, I agree that how we fix dental decay is important, but our organisation is, how do we stop fluoridation? Do you see what I mean? Like, we're concerned about stopping fluoridation because we believe it's harming people's health in a number of ways. So dental decay is like a secondary issue for us, because how the Ministry of Health or the District Health Boards or whatever decide to tackle dental decay, that's up to them to be figuring out, just like Canterbury went and figured out. And yes, we do need public education, like never put anything in a baby's bottle apart from clean water or milk. However, our organisation, what we're focusing on is we want the councillors to stop putting basically a poison into our drinking water, which is actually a different issue than dental decay.
Yes, I understand that now.
Yeah.
Now, your website says that the American health authorities are warning not to give fluoride to babies. Can you explain that, please?
Okay, well, what they're saying is that at the level that we add fluoride to water, which is 0.7 to 1 part per million, at that level, it may cause dental fluorosis. Now, we know in New Zealand that fluoridated areas, 30% of children have got dental fluorosis. And we know in non-fluoridated areas, 15% have. Now, it could be that those ones in the non-fluoridated areas were actually living in a fluoridated area when they were babies, because not quite enough detail to know exactly where these children were living at each time. However, we know that we've got 30% of children in fluoridated areas that have had way too much fluoride. They've got dental fluorosis. So the American Dental Association and the US Public Health Services Centers for Disease Control, they've both said you shouldn't give fluoridated tap water to babies because at that level you can cause dental fluorosis. Now, they're still sticking that dental fluorosis isn't that bad, but I think anybody who can think a little bit can see that, of course, it could be bad. You know, we don't know, do we? We don't know if it's affected their bones. We don't know if it's affected their thyroid. We don't know if it's affected their IQ. So they're warning that. Now, they're the two staunchest supporters of fluoridation in the world. So therefore, our Ministry of Health and actually and all the councillors and the councils around the country who are giving this medication to babies should be at least telling parents. At the very least, the councillors around New Zealand should be writing to people in their communities and saying, hey, the top supporters of fluoridation in the world are advising that you don't give fluoridated tap water to your baby. Why they don't want to do that, obviously, is it opens up a whole can of worms, because if fluoridated tap water is not safe for babies, well, then what's it doing in our water? And why would it be okay to have something in our water that's not safe for the most vulnerable sector of our community? It just seems just absolutely absurd. It's not even absurd, it's totally wrong. It's irresponsible of these health authorities to not tell people. And what we get from the Ministry of Health is we get fobbed off, basically, and they have these excuses that, oh, in America they have higher amounts of naturally occurring fluoride, which a little bit of America does. Half a percentage of Americans have water that has more than 2 parts per million. However, the warning is from 0.7 parts per million upwards, which is what we're putting into our water. So the warning does apply here. Then the other argument that the Ministry of Health puts up is they say, we allow very little fluoride in our formula, in the actual baby powder formula. But that's not the point, because even without the formula, the water has too much fluoride in it. They're just trying to divert us onto something that isn't even the point. The point is, by feeding a baby a bottle of water that has been fluoridated, you've actually given the baby too much fluoride. So I think this is a very serious issue that our health authorities have really got to start dealing with.
So what percentage of New Zealand is fluoridated?
Well, it's hard to say. It's about 61% of the reticulated supplies.
And I think it comes to about 55% of the population, but also less than half of the councils in New Zealand actually fluoridate their water supply. New Zealand is one of the higher ones in the world at around, let's say, 55%. You know, one of only a handful of countries that actually fluoridate that amount of the population.
So I think the Gold Coast in Australia does not fluoridate.
There's big battles going on over there, including legal action against the Premier and other lawsuits being filed, some of them to do with the allergy to fluoride that some people have, 1% of the population have. So there's lawsuits going on over there right now.
And so does the Ministry of Health do any monitoring of fluoride intake of accumulation bones or possible adverse health effects here?
None whatsoever, and they told us that under the Official Information Act. They didn't even include it in the so-called total dietary survey they did 2 or 3 years ago. What part of total I didn't understand, I'm not quite sure, but fluoride was specifically excluded from it. We think the estimates are that people are actually taking in upwards of 3 milligrams of fluoride per day, and that compares with less than 0.5 of a milligram per day back in the 1930s before fluoridation began.
So who within the health industry supports you?
Well, we've actually just formed a coalition with 7 other national health-focused organisations, and we have four others who are supporting us, although they're not formally in the coalition. So it's not just fans that are saying this. You mentioned earlier Maori and Pacific Islanders. The Western Price Foundation, one of the coalition partners in this, and the Western Price, of course, did a lot of that study on Maori and Africans and other native peoples. Soil and Health Association, who published the Organic New Zealand, are another group. Health Freedom New Zealand, who campaigned successfully a couple of years back against the Trans-Tasman Therapeutic Goods Bill, or the Anti-Vitamin Bill as it became known, is the other main organisation that we work with to found this coalition.
Are there many doctors or dentists who can, very difficult for them to openly support you, but are you getting support from behind the scenes on this?
Well, we actually have one doctor and one dentist on our committee, funnily enough. Of course, both of them get hammered by their respective associations for speaking the truth about fluoride. Actually, they are both officials of another organisation, which is specifically doctors and dentists who are opposed to fluoridation. But as you say, it's very difficult for them to speak out. In the United States, for example, a dentist who speaks out against fluoridation is likely to have their licence to practice revoked just through politics. And you also find that they get indoctrinated at dental school and medical school with the corporate spin, if you want to call it that, on fluoridation, and they never question it. And it's only very rarely that doctors or dentists have reason to suspect there's anything wrong and step outside of that indoctrination and look into it for themselves. And then invariably they turn against fluoridation. Hardy Lyon back in Canada was an example, John Calhoun here in New Zealand.
Yeah, John Calhoun was Principal Dental Officer of Auckland, and he was very instrumental in getting fluoridation in New Zealand, in particular in Wellington. And he was one of the main advocates. But anyway, when he studied the data that came out on the fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas as far as the dental decay went, he found that it didn't actually help teeth at all, especially when he allowed for the socioeconomic statuses. He actually found that for the lower socioeconomic statuses, that they had better teeth without fluoride than with fluoride. So he found that it was very difficult for him to stand up and change his mind, and he thought, well, maybe he wouldn't do anything until he found that it was actually damaging teeth, and then he found about damaging bones, things like that. So he felt that he had to stand up and say, like, no, we've made a mistake. It's not actually helping teeth, and it's causing these problems. So he was ridiculed, and you'll hear people today say, oh, John Calhoun, you know, and they just write him off because that's what they did to him, because he dared to say that there was something wrong with him.
Is he still alive today?
No, he's not, unfortunately.
So again, it's very difficult then getting a professional advocate to stand up, and the Ministry of Health just carries on? Is that the story?
Well, I think actually what we mostly need is we need the public to be outraged, because where they're getting the fluoride from is from the phosphate fertiliser industries. Now, fluoride is too toxic to be allowed to be going out of the chimneys. So the phosphate fertiliser industry has to put a cap on their smokestacks, and then they wash out the fluoride, and then they have a toxic waste problem. So they can't just go and dump it into a river or the sea, because that would violate international law. So they have a toxic waste problem. Now, by selling it to us and saying that we think it's good for teeth, and we drip feed it through our public water supply, they can turn their toxic waste into a profit. Now, we buy out fluoride in Wellington and Dunedin from a company in Belgium called Prayon. Now, in Belgium, of course, they don't have any fluoridation, because they don't have any fluoridation throughout the whole of continental Europe. And in Belgium, they've even banned the fluoride tablets because they're useless and potentially toxic. But we buy their toxic waste and we drip feed it through our public water supply. Now, I find that outrageous. I find it outrageous that councillors are adding a toxic waste to my drinking water. Now, I pay my rates, or I pay for the drinking water, just as much as any of them do, or just as much as anyone from the Ministry of Health. We all pay for the water equally, whether we pay rates or we pay it through the rent. So we all have an equal say over the water. Now, I don't want toxic waste in my drinking water, and I don't even think I should have to argue that. I think it should have been a given that they don't go putting a toxic waste in my drinking water. However, I do have to argue it, and I'm surprised that so many people don't feel a sense of kind of violation that somebody has so little respect for somebody else that they can just put toxic waste in their drinking water and their children's drinking water and their baby's drinking water. And then there's all these things we know about it. We know that 30% of children show signs of having had too much fluoride. We know that it may be causing osteosarcoma. Why would we take that risk? We know it's accumulating in our bones, and too much fluoride can cause brittle bones. We know that it has an effect on the thyroid. That's a given, that it does affect the thyroid. It's just the level. So why would we do all of this, and why just the general public need to be outraged? And that's, it's kind of scary or something, and I suppose other people and organisations find exactly the same thing. Like I was listening to the guy from SAFE, and, you know, there's the vaccinations and all the rest of it, but it's that thing of the public. I think there's just too much cynicism and apathy. There's a lot of cynicism where people just go, oh, they won't do anything. What's the point? There's no point in telling them, so they don't do anything. And then there's the apathy, and people just can't be bothered because it's all too hard, and they just want to get on and do their own thing, and they can't be bothered. And I suppose they don't realise that it is actually affecting their health. What we've found out here in Wellington, in the suburb that I live in Petone, we have really nice, clean drinking water. It's artesian, and we have a fountain that is completely unmedicated, just water coming up from the ground. Now, they're saying that there was 12,500 visits per month for people going out there filling up with water, and that's in an average of taking 20 litres a time. So we're talking about 3,000 visits.
Well, it was 250,000 litres a month was being taken from that pumping station.
Yeah, so we've got hundreds, maybe thousands of people going out to the Petone fountain every week just to get clean drinking water. And it just seems such a shame that our councillors aren't listening. The rest of Lower Hutt, they just need to stop putting it in, and they've got beautiful, clean artesian water. But they're not listening, and you've got all these people that obviously don't agree with them, and they're just continuing to do it. It's bizarre.
But you're coming back to your point about advocates and so on. One of the things that's happened in the last year or two is the Fluoride Action Network in the USA has put together video clips from a number of the world's leading scientific researchers who don't have a political commitment to or for or against fluoridation. They're simply making statements about the harms they're seeing in their research, and that can be often neurological damage, particularly to young children. And it can be a range of things. But there are a number of them speaking out now. Some were on the US National Research Council review panel on fluoride or fluoridation. One is a Nobel laureate in medicine, Dr. David Carlson. So we're getting sort of advocates in that sense, and they are becoming known through YouTube and through other means, which is good. It's a pity, as you say, there isn't like a prominent figure in New Zealand like John Calhoun or someone like that, but we are getting international support in opposing fluoridation. It's increasing.
Yeah, there's actually a professional statement and petition, and there's about 2,500 signatures, and that's just for professionals around the world who are opposed to fluoridation. And as Mark just alluded to, there was a National Research Council in America. They did a 3.5-year study on fluoridation. And, well, it wasn't actually on fluoridation. It was on the maximum contaminant level of fluoride in the drinking water there, because their level there is 4 part per million. And it was a review to see if that level was too high. That was a 12-member panel, and it had fluoride experts from both for and against fluoride, and people like who are risk analysts and stuff. Now, 3 of those people have signed the petition and been speaking out against fluoridation. And the chairman of that review, who was pro-fluoride, he's saying time for second thoughts. He's worried about what's happening with the thyroid, and even he's saying it's time now to have a second look at fluoridation. And they found that level of 4 part per million is too high, and it needs to be lowered, but they couldn't specify what level it should be lowered to.
Because they couldn't find a lower level at which there was no adverse health effects from the studies that they looked at. They couldn't find any lower safe level.
About 4 years ago, I did a study. I researched outside one of Auckland's largest Whole Foods shop, and I asked questions of the shoppers when they came out, and I said, do you filter your water? and I found out that only 1/3 of the people who were buying organic food were actually filtering their water. That was an eye-opener for me, because at one level we need to have as pure water as possible into our body, and here they were, they were buying whole foods and mainly organic foods, but they weren't really focusing much on the water.
And yeah, I think we've had this feeling in New Zealand that we've got clean water, we've got nice clean water, and people haven't worried about it that much. In some parts of New Zealand that's true, as I said, like in Petone, it's true. In Lower Hutt it would be true if they didn't have the fluoride. In Christchurch it's true, they've got really good water down there. And then the other thing about the filters is not many of the filters take fluoride out. So that's quite an issue, because you have to get the more expensive filters and people have to find out which ones do that, because most of them don't.
I think it's also interesting that fluoridated water is still allowed to be used in organic products, which is something that's being looked at the moment, because most of the consumers of organic products tend to disagree with it. I appreciate what you said about not filtering it out, but in talking with BioGrow, their position was that it's something that shouldn't be in organic products, and it's kind of like slipped under the radar. As Mary says, people just kind of forget that it's there almost, because it's like it's clean water, so we don't think about it.
Very difficult. I know I stand out in my garden, and I'm watering my garden, and I know that there's chlorine in the water that goes through the sprinkler, and also, as you say, fluoride.
Mercury,
and
lead, arsenic.
Alum.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is. It's to awaken New Zealanders to take responsibility for their health, their future, their children.
Yeah, well, what we want is for people to get in touch with us. We've got this new fluoridation-free New Zealand campaign, and we'd like as many people as possible to get onto the website, the fans' website at the moment. That's the one we've got at the moment. We'll be getting another one. And to get in contact with us, because we're getting organised. We've got groups around the country, and we're getting more organised. In Hamilton, they've been doing quite well, and they've been putting a lot of pressure on the council, and some of the councillors agree with us, and they want to stop it too. So we just need more people. We just need more people to agree, just to be doing a few things like writing some letters, coming to some council meetings, not asking people to give up their whole lives or anything. But if we just had enough people, that's what's going to change it. We just need enough people to register their opposition and be prepared just to do a few things like write letters and that, and sign petitions or help us get signatures for petitions. And then I really think that we can change it in New Zealand. I think that we are getting closer, because I think there's councillors out there that have started to look at the information and they realise it doesn't make sense. Some of the councillors are just stuck because no one else on their council agrees with them, or they just don't have the numbers on the council to change it. But so we just need more people to put pressure on the councillors to go and look at this information and to be honest about it, and to realise that it is not worth the risk, because there isn't actually any benefit. And even if there was a tiny benefit for baby teeth, it is not worth any of these risks.
Can you, for our overseas listeners, can you give it a little detail? Europe's got a very small amount of people wanting fluoridated water.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, they don't have any fluoridated water in the whole of continental Europe. Ireland has about 70%, and the UK has about 11%, but there's been a push by the UK government to have more fluoridation. Now, there's people in the UK that are up in arms about it, because they're wanting to introduce it to a city called Southampton. And in Southampton, they did a survey, and they found that more people didn't want it than did. And then they asked for submissions, and they got something like 72% of the people saying they didn't want fluoridation, and that the public health people are just going to do it anyway. So there just hasn't been any kind of democracy or anything like that. It's just, for some reason, the UK government has decided that they need to do this.
And yeah, also in Europe, a number of the countries that ran trials, say 10 years in the 60s or 70s, and they found there was no benefit. They also had concerns about health risks, and most of them also cited concerns that it was basically unethical forced mass medication. So for those reasons, some of them either never started, or some of them just decided after their trials were up to not go ahead, like Sweden, for example, which then made it illegal again. So Europe has looked at it, and they said no. And, of course, Europe wasn't under the political sort of pressure from the US and that the Allies after World War II were, which is where you've seen the fluoridation come in, US, UK and countries under them.
Yeah, and in the Netherlands, some doctors there found that it was between 1% and 3% of the population were allergic to fluoride in some way. So just like people are allergic to small amounts of penicillin, some people are allergic to small amounts of fluoride. So because they had patients and they did these double-blind studies and that sort of thing, they proved that some people are allergic to fluoride. So that was another reason why in the Netherlands they stopped fluoridation, and they actually passed a law that they could never again add a substance to the public water supply that was intended to medicate the people. Because that's the thing with fluoride, is it's only there to medicate us. It's only there for this dental medication. There's no other reason. And I think actually one of the things we haven't really said today is that about 10 years ago, the whole fluoridation experts or whatever all around the world changed their theory on how fluoride works. So in the beginning, they said that people had to drink it because it gets into the developing teeth and the bones, and because it gets into the developing teeth, it makes the enamel more resistant to dental decay. But what they've found now is that even if it does get into the enamel, it doesn't make it more resistant to dental decay. So because they've like ditched that theory and says, oh, well, actually, we were wrong about that, now they've had to have a new theory. So they say, oh, the reason we have to keep drinking it now is because a little bit gets in our saliva, and that little bit helps to remineralize our teeth. In fact, they're wrong about that, because the amount that you would need in your saliva is much higher than you can actually get from drinking fluoridated water. So they're basically saying that the benefit, if there is a benefit from fluoride, is from topical use. So they mean brushing it or applying those sealants. So they're on very, very thin ice now that they're making us continue to drink it, when they know that if there's a benefit, the biggest benefit comes from brushing your teeth with it and then spitting it out.
And in Australia, because I know that Australia too, it's a very contentious. Can you explain just a couple of maybe instances in Australia so that people here realise that the battle's going all around?
Yeah, well, in Australia, one of the things I've thought is really interesting is that in south of Melbourne, they've got these little townships. Now, some people had moved there because they're allergic to fluoride and severely allergic to fluoride. Like, there's this one woman who found that every time she went to Melbourne, she got severe asthma and her breathing went down a huge amount. She didn't pick that it was fluoride in the water. And it took a long time, and she was going to the hospital and they were saying, oh, maybe it was this or maybe it was that. And then she went to this naturopath and he identified the fluoride and he took her to the hospital and they did tests in the hospital and they found that her lung function went down by 3/4 when she drank fluoridated water. Now, I just find it appalling that these people in Australia, they're now putting fluoride into her drinking water. So her township now has fluoridated water. So they've had big protests over there. They've had 800 people marching in the streets, and a huge amount of protest. But the authorities just don't seem to care what people think.
Yeah, now, as I say, they're taking lawsuits, a lawsuit in Queensland, and they're looking at whether they can take a lawsuit against Anna Bligh. When they put in the legislation in Queensland to force fluoridation on local people, in spite of all the protests and all the letters to ministers and everything else, they put in a provision in the law that says you can't sue anybody for harm that's caused by us doing this. When it gets to that stage, if you've got to stop people from suing you for harm, then what does it tell you about the ground you're standing on, you know?
That's right. Oh, everybody should be really alarmed.
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, it's
yeah, in Australia, they're really angry.
Yeah, we get emails from there and the latest protest and the latest lawsuit and everything else. Yeah, it's very, very vocal and right in your face there in those places in Victoria and in Queensland at the moment.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that our councillors can be more responsive, and if we keep the control local with our local councillors, then the councillors really are just people like us, and hopefully if we can just get them to look at the information, that they'll see sense.
So in a sense, you want all listeners to go to their council, because that's where, because it's localised and you can actually go and knock on their door and talk to them,
yeah.
That's where you actually set up the resonance to say, well, look, I'm just an ordinary human being, so are you, these are the stats, and it looks like this mass medication has been an experiment that should never have happened.
Yeah, that's right. And, yeah, we'd like people to contact us so we can coordinate as well with them, because if we have a coordinated approach, it's a lot better. That's really where we think people should be. Writing letters to the paper and things like that is also good, and telling people.
We would like to see referendums, but at the moment, referendums seem to have a lot of difficulty in getting through to the government and becoming law. So I guess we've just got to do everything very locally.
I think a referendum's kind of, there's two sides to that. I mean, so in some places that's the only way we've kept it out or got it out. But realistically, you know, from a philosophical point of view, I'd have to say, why should anybody be voting on somebody else's medication? So in that sense, I don't think there should be a referendum on curation, because it should just be stopped, because no one has a right to vote on somebody else's medication. I mean, if I get sick, I don't ask the people to vote on what medication I should have, go and see the doctor or naturopath or whatever. And I don't see why fluoridation should be any different. But, yeah, realistically, sometimes a referendum is the only way to get the councillors or politicians to listen.
Yeah, well, that's when the councillors don't want to make the decision. They want to put it out to the community, isn't it? So it's their way of not actually taking responsibility for turning it off.
What we see, actually, when there is a referendum, that if balanced information is put out, people usually vote 2-1 against fluoridation. And, of course, the DHBs, district health boards, try to stop balanced information going out. They try to boycott the information process, say, oh, well, we're not putting out information for fluoridation, so you, the council, can't put out information against fluoridation when you send out the voting papers. But, of course, what we do now is we just get one of their old ones and say, well, here's their information and here's ours. And, yeah, as I say, when people get equal and balanced information, They see the facts and they vote against fluoridation.
Yes, but what's difficult is most people have heard for sort of the last 40 years that fluoride's good for teeth, and most people think it's an essential nutrient, doesn't do any harm, it's good for teeth, and most of the world does it. I think that'd be the four things that most people think, whereas in actual fact those four things aren't true, but the Ministry of Health have set it up that that's the
mindset.
Yeah, that's sort of what they convey to people. So people get that feeling. They get the feeling that most of the world does it, and they get the feeling that it's an essential nutrient, even though it's not. So what happens for organisations like ourselves is we're up against, firstly, 40 years of history, and whenever we do have a campaign, the Ministry of Health has a lot more money to put into those campaigns than we do, because we're just self-funded, obviously.
Well, you're volunteers. You're doing what you feel is important for your future and for your health.
Yeah.
And for everyone's.
Yeah, because what kept me in this fight is when I found out about people being allergic to fluoride. That's actually when I was, the group I was in, we stopped it coming into our suburb. But what kept me in this was that I realised that some people are allergic, so some people are really sick. Some people are really sick and spend their whole lives not being well, whether it's like chronic fatigue, stomach upsets, headaches, and it can be debilitating. For some people, it's really bad. So that kept me in this thing, because I just feel that's really wrong. It's really wrong for us to be adding something to the public water supply that makes people, some people, really sick. That's not fair.
So I'm speaking with Mark Atkin and Mary Byrne of the Fluoride Action Network here in New Zealand at www.fannz.org.nz.
One of the things that the ministry really tries to play on is they say, oh, this really helps the poor more than anyone, especially Maori and Pacific people. And, of course, quite the opposite is true. Firstly, the York Review in the UK in 2000 looked at 3,000-odd studies and said we can't find any real evidence that it helps the poor at all. And we see from our own statistics in Napier and Hastings, after 50 years of fluoridation, people in Hastings, whether they be European, Maori, Pacific Islanders, still have more tooth decay than their equivalents in unfluoridated Napier. But the biggest problem is that the poor are more adversely affected by fluoride than others, partly because a poorer diet, lower in calcium and magnesium, means they can't defend themselves against this toxicity. Also, Maori and Pacific Islanders have predisposed to diabetes and kidney problems, and both of those groups are more susceptible to harm from fluoride than others. So on a range of counts, Maori Pacific Islanders and poor people of whatever race are actually the worst affected by fluoride, not the most helped.
Yeah, that's very revealing, isn't it? Can you explain a little bit about your website and where you're going with this?
Our FAMS website has been set up to provide New Zealand-specific information because there's a great website called fluorideaction.net.
Or fluoridealert.org is the other one.
Yeah. And that's the International Fluoride Action Network that was set up by Paul Kinnett. That's a really, really good website and it's got mountains of information. But what we did is we just set up another site just to give people some New Zealand information, like referenda that's been held in New Zealand, what were the results, what our Ministry of Health is saying, like why aren't we putting out the warning about infant formula and fluoride. Where in New Zealand do we have fluoride? What councils support it? Where can you get some good water? Things like that. But now that we've joined with Health Freedom New Zealand and the other organisations for this Fluoridation Free New Zealand campaign, we are setting up a website which will be called www.banfluoride.org.nz. So that will be a really good site for people to go to as well.
Yeah, that's really for coordinating the campaign at a national level and so on and getting people involved.
But it also provides a nice entry point for people. They don't know much about fluoridation. It's got nice, easy-to-read information with videos and things like that so people can come to grips with what the issue is about.
And that website again?
It's www.banfluoride.org.nz.
So how do you see things happening over the next year or two?
Oh, well, what we see happening is that we'll probably be having petitions in various parts of New Zealand, I'd imagine, and we'll be working more strongly with the councils, because we have been getting more people involved, so we'll be getting more people approaching the councils and asking them to put this on their agenda so that they can have another look at it.
Because a lot of the councils, and I've met heaps of councillors in Auckland over the years, and essentially they're quite independent of, particularly the ones who are sort of on the leading edge of wanting to be sustainable, etc., and so they should be the ones, of course, who most probably already are wanting fluoride out of the water. I guess it's the others, just the more conservative ones?
Yeah, and I mean, some of the councillors, we find half of the councillors are against and half of them are for. And there's also other reasons that go on behind the scenes. Like one of the top people at the Hutt City Council said to me, oh, well, the problem is if we stop fluoridation, we'd be saying that we didn't think the Ministry of Health was credible. So that was like a reason for him. He felt like, oh no, how can we stop? Because they'll think we don't believe them or something. I suppose that's like the emperor's clothes, isn't it? That idea. So there's things like that go on.
Then of course there's the money that the Ministry of Health has to fund water installations or repairs and so on, so long as councils put fluoridation plants in. And often that money is provided for things other than fluoridation. It's all part of a package deal. So financially, sometimes the council just can't afford not to put it in.
Yeah, like we found that down in Milton, down the South Island. They were getting quite a good grant from the Ministry of Health if they had the fluoridation, if they decided to have fluoridation in their new plant. So in the end, they decided to because financially it made sense for them.
So the action from now on is for listeners to get involved there, councillors, and if they need to, write some letters, but go to your website and be involved in our future, particularly our children's future.
Yeah, if they contact us, it would be really good. We've got information that we can give them to help them along, like flyers and DVDs and things like that, and put them in touch with other people in their area.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, Mark and Mary, I want to say thank you very much for sharing with me.
Oh, thank you for having us on. That's great.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
That was Mark Atkin and Mary Byrne on the line from Wellington. They are spokespeople for the Fluoride Action Network here in New Zealand at www.fannz.org.nz. Also, you may wish to look at banfluoride.org.nz.